You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. It's time to look in the mirror, America. Do you like what you see?
I keep referring to Obama as the magic Negro.
Do you like what you see now?
Well, suck on this.
It's just a mirror, America.
Shared sacrifice by everybody.
What could it do to you except reflect your image?
I did nothing wrong at the Minneapolis airport.
The Majority Report.
Far more credible to me than PBS.
And Front One. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
If I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Tuesday, June 12, 2012. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Today on the program, from Current TV's Viewpoint, the host, I should say, of Current TV's Viewpoint, Elliot Spitzer. Also on the program today, the Supreme Court did not rule on the Affordable Care Act yesterday. Apparently Mondays and Thursdays. So it Mondays and Thursdays are the days that people anticipated. But in the wake of the Supreme Court not announcing its ruling, health insurance companies attempt to head off any attempt to take the pressure off of Republicans to deal with what a repeal would mean. I will explain that later. I know you don't get it now because I didn't explain it well. The fiscal cliff. We're coming increasingly. That's the real issue as far as I'm concerned right now. Not who's going to win the election. What are the Democrats going to do in terms of the fiscal cliff? I will also continue the theme that I started yesterday on the Kudlow Report. Talking to two Republican shills. Well, I guess three if we're talking about including the host. On the implications of public spending. Rick Scott still desperately wants to purge voters from his roles. Republicans remain insane. And apparently, because I am not willing to... we'll save this for the better half of the program, but I did get a an email today saying that I was a huge coward for not promoting a third-party presidential run because I'm afraid of suffering. I think the guy has really no sense of how would I suffer if a third party ran and Mitt Romney won the election. I'm in the business of political talk on the left. I could probably draw a one-to-one relationship with Mitt Romney winning the election and my fortunes increasing. I just don't understand people. And I did get one Twitter comment from a longtime listener saying, you know, if you want to sound a little sort of whiny and oppressed by talking about that letter you're getting that you got yesterday, that email that we spoke about, you did a good job with that. That was not my intention. But this, I am struggling with this dilemma as well. But getting bad arguments on one side or another really annoys me. And gladly, I don't get many Obama bot emails saying something like, you shouldn't talk about these things because it's wrong. Well, I guess my wife calls in and says that. But aside from at home, I don't get many of those conversations. We will take a break, and when we come back, we'll be talking to Elliot Spitzer from Viewpoint
on Current. We are back, Sam Seder on the Majority Report. It's a pleasure to welcome back to the program the host of Current's Viewpoint, 8 p.m. local Eastern time, Elliot Spitzer. Welcome to the program, Elliot.
Always fun to chat with you. Thank you.
So I want to talk about, I've seen a couple of, I saw your piece recently in Slate about the things that President Obama needs to do. Essentially, to promote some type of positive agenda, and they were pretty good ideas. We don't have too much time, so I want to focus more on rather because I think you know President Obama can come out and promote an agenda, but there's very little opportunity for him to do anything. It seems to me on a policy level, at least until the election. And arguably, even after the election, depending on what on how the House or Senate goes.
Correct. I think, not to cut you off before you even ask the question, but I think that's certainly right. Depending on how November turns out, obviously we're hoping the president's reelected, but what the constituency of Congress looks like will determine what the viability is of any ideas that require legislative enactment.
Right, exactly. But there is one thing, and this came up quite a bit at Netroots Nation in Providence this weekend, was what their agenda is to deal with the lame duck session, to deal with the so-called fiscal cliff.
Right.
At that time, we're going to have the Bush tax cuts are all scheduled to expire. We're going to see the automatic cuts that were triggered in the debt deal. We're also going to see another debt ceiling vote that's going to happen sometime in early 2013. All these forces are conspiring. Do you have a sense that the Democrats in the House and the Senate have a plan to deal with this?
Well, look, there's nobody there who's called me and said, here's what our strategy is. And, of course, there's no reason they will or they should. But I hope they have a strategy. And I think the frustration many of us have had, to begin for answering it by looking backwards just a little bit, is that in the prior negotiations, we feel as though we have walked into the buzzsaw of the other side and given, gotten nothing back. We haven't learned how to draw lines in the sand and said, here's our negotiating position, take it, leave it. The consequences are up to you. We haven't negotiated very effectively in the White House included, obviously. I think that our hand actually gets stronger as we move towards January 1st, in the sense that the Republicans are very upset about the sequestration deal, the automatic cuts, because they say, oh my goodness, the Defense Department's going to be cut. Well, it should be cut. We're happy with that, and we're happy to let that come into existence. And not optimal, but it's acceptable. If they're going to be cuts, that's a place where there should be cuts. And so having that march forward is fine for us. They want to repeal that. The Bush tax cuts will expire. They are adamant that they have to be extended for the wealthy. We would like them to continue for the middle class, those below 250, 500, pick a threshold that can be negotiated. So, but the expiration of those come January 1st, again, permits us to say, look, if you don't do something, they're going to expire and rates will increase. You don't want that. Here's our proposal. So, again, we're in a pretty strong position. And we look at them and say, are you really going to let the credit of the United States be jeopardized, you've got to vote to raise the debt ceiling, or else, again, you guys are playing the impossible role. Look what happened last summer when you were obstructionist. So I think our position in this is pretty strong. We can come forward with a modulated, smart proposal, extend the tax cuts for the middle class, which is necessary now given the economic reality, do smart spending cuts in areas like defense that can afford it, with do not jeopardize the social safety net, extend some aid to states and localities to rehire teachers, cops, firefighters that would help the economy and provide basic services, and raise the debt ceiling. There is a smart middle ground there that people should agree to.
Yeah, I mean, it does. I mean, now this is getting a little bit into the weeds from a strategic standpoint, but it is, I think, sort of important to know. And you're basically articulating a vision that the Democrats have all the leverage here. And so, I mean, in the sense that, I mean, they could come back in 2013, and even assuming that, and of course, the dynamic changes a little bit if they don't control the House or the Senate.
Correct.
But they could simply allow all of this to expire and then propose a middle class tax cut, whether it's a 250 or wherever
right.
it is, as opposed to sort of attempting to negotiate a deal beforehand. They have less leverage, it seems.
Right. Now, look, we don't know who will have more leverage in December or in January 2nd because we don't know the outcome of the November elections, of course. So there's a game of uncertainty and a risk being played on both sides. But I think it would be good for the president to stand up. I mean, remember your question began with what should the president be talking about now? And how does he set out his agenda? I think he should explain all this to the American public and say, we got two fundamentally different visions here. Here is my proposal. Boom, boom, boom. On debt ceiling, on extending the tax cuts, on sequestration. Get into the weeds enough. The public can be educated on this. And there are many different levels of communication. And the president could lay out that agenda and say, here is what we want to do. That's why the attack on Bain may be working in some areas, but I think it gets a little one-dimensional and negative for a president whose overpowering appeal had been one of affirmative, an agenda that would carry us forward.
Yeah, I mean, I sort of disagree on that because I think that the numbers are the Bain thing is helping. It also provides the sort of framework for a broader conversation, and it's June. And Mitt Romney is sitting somewhere in, I don't know where it is, in Boston or one of his houses, and he doesn't even seem to be campaigning. And so it seems to me to be a great time.
Well, when I say change the Bain, I would prefer to see the positive agenda. When it comes to Bain, here's what I would do with it. I would not simply attack Bain as being a negative evil force, which may or may not be working. I haven't seen the polling data that persuades me one way or the other. But what I would certainly do is say, when it comes to private equity, we do it better. In other words, there I think the better argument is, we invested in the auto sector. You wanted it to go bankrupt. We brought private equity in the context of a government investment to bear, restructured an industry, have saved tens of thousands of jobs, revitalized the entire manufacturing core in several states, and you would have said no to this deal. So if you want to talk about private equity, let's talk about it. I do it better. I think that would be the president's more persuasive argument.
Yeah, I mean, I would like to see it sort of even a Bain plus, where he sort of says that, you know, this is what government can do. I mean, sort of broaden that conversation to get to tie in.
Can I pick up on that for a second?
Please.
Sam, I think you and I both would like to see the larger debate to be the more theoretical one, what is the purpose of government? And we have a more Hamiltonian view of a government that does invest, build, create, whereas the best as we can figure from Mitt Romney's, you know, etch-a-sketch, weather vane articulation of it, he is almost a nihilist when it comes to government. Less is better, cut taxes. You know, you and I parody his inability to explain what government should do.
Exactly. And you know, I think that one of the benefits that President Obama has in this campaign is that if he articulates any agenda, he's already just in a generic sense doing better than Romney, because Romney doesn't seem to have one.
Precisely.
But I want to talk about one of the concerns that that I have going into seeing the attempts to negotiate a deal in the lame duck. There's been, you know, ton of reporting that President Obama put on the table cuts to Social Security as part of a grand bargain. Now, I know you and I have a difference here, and one of my many things to do on my to-do list is to convince you, is to try and argue and convince you otherwise of of cutting Social Security. But
can I interrupt? Can you interrupt for 1 second? Cutting is not the word I've ever been supportive of. You know, maybe that's a quibble. What I have said is that I do not have a difficulty with overtime as part of a large, and there are other things I'm sure you and I do agree with in terms of raising the threshold for what part of income is taxable in terms of to support Social Security, et cetera. I don't have a theoretical problem with saying, you know what, given demographics, given how long we all work, we can raise the retirement age over 20, 30 years by a year or two. That doesn't bother me.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if we're talking about over 30 years, but why not make that decision in 20 years from now? I mean, because we've seen over the past 70 years, the age, the life expectancy after the age of 65, because, of course, life expectancy is a highly volatile, highly subject to changes in infant mortality and child deaths. But over the past 70 years, we've seen that rise 5 years. And and most of those gains have come on the upper end, the upper half of the income disparity. We know that black males after age 65 have only gained 2 years of life expectancy over the past 70. And 1 year, I think, for everybody in the bottom half of the income distribution. Why not just say raise the cap? I mean, we're already underperforming from 1980. We're already underperforming by about 7% in terms of what the Social Security.
Sam, let me be very clear. I'm completely with you. I have always said raise the cap, and we're talking a little bit in code here. By raising the cap, we mean raise the threshold. What is it, 108? 110? What is
it? 110 right now.
110. You know, income above $110,000 is not taxable for contributions to the Social Security Trust Fund. It should be. Raise it to 250, raise it to 500, whatever the number is, and then we would solve the problems. I'm completely with you. That is the best solution. It's the right solution. Having said that, I'm also, as I said, as a theoretical matter, since we are living longer, healthcare is getting better, over time, recognizing that fact, it doesn't bother me that we would bring Social Security into that to the point where we say, let's adjust it given what demographic realities are. That's all. I mean, I don't think you and I are that far apart.
No, I don't think so. I just, you know, I'm a real stickler on this.
That's all right. that's good with me. I like that.
So I want to turn to one of the other things that was taking place at Netroots was Eric Schneiderman was the keynote speaker on Thursday night. And there's probably, I think, no greater concentration of people who have followed the whole financial fraud task force, the mortgage fraud settlement deal than people at who work in the blogs, amongst the blogs. Give me your sense of just what happened in terms of Schneiderman and whether or not you think, I mean. Are you? I know. 4 or 5 months ago, he came out after that and said, "You know, measure my progress within 6 months." Well, you know, it's been 4 or 5 months.
Right.
They barely have phones over there.
Right. You know, look, I have tried to be very supportive and continue to be very supportive of Eric for a couple of reasons. Full disclosure: he's a friend. He has the position that I had, and so I want to see the office do well. I'd like to think that we began a tradition of an active AG's office that pursued tough cases, and one of the domains where we did that was Wall Street, and that's not easy to do, but it's important to do for obvious reasons. He pushed back effectively against a mortgage settlement that was inadequate at first. Whether it ended up at the optimal place, he got it to move to a better place. I think now the burden is on him, and I've told him this privately and publicly, the burden is on him to produce. And people are waiting. We have a short time span, a short attention span, both in the media and in the public at large. Sometimes it does take longer to make cases, but then again, it's been a lot of years since the violations took place. And so I think there is a sense of brewing frustration, and I'd like to see some results. And I don't want to say anything that sounds as though I'm trying to be critical or push in a way that, you know, I understand both sides of the equation, how tough it is to make cases, but also how important it is to make them. And so I think I'm somewhat like probably most of the folks in the audience there saying, okay, we're supportive of you. We're applauding the intentions you've articulated, but let's, you know, where the famous line from a couple years back, where's the beef?
Right.
And I think we have to see it pretty soon.
Is there a statute of limitations on?
Oh, sure.
What are we looking at? 5 years.
Five years on most criminal offenses, a bit longer on some of the civil offenses. Sometimes you can extend it either because you can get people who are the subject of the investigation to sign a waiver, or because an ongoing conspiracy to cover up permits you to charge the conspiracy, which has continued beyond the actual event itself. But as years go by, evidence gets thin, recollections fade, documents disappear, not in a malevolent way, they just do disappear. And so...
Aren't we literally months away from those statute limitations?
In some cases, yes. And so I think people should be, you know, gently or not so gently nudging, saying, hey, guys, I think the greater burden does fall on the Justice Department, which does have the resources.
Well, they've basically made it clear, it seems to me, that there's just no way they're going to pursue any of this.
I have got to tell you that the Justice Department under this administration, and I mean the Obama administration, has not acquitted itself with great glory in a number of areas, from terrorism investigations where they overtly and stood up and said, we're looking forward, not backwards. I said, okay, don't necessarily agree with that, but they said that. Wall Street, where they have not done much of anything. And I think what I said one night on my TV program was, the third strike will be, if they do nothing under the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act, investigations that should be ongoing about Walmart and News Corp.
Right.
And the reason in particular there, put aside the Wall Street cases, some of which I acknowledge might be tough, although, trust me, I'm harshly critical of the failure to bring those cases. When it comes to the FCPA, the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act, they have made it their business to bring many cases against small fry companies for reasonably small violations. If you have a cover-up all the way up to the CEO of Walmart and you don't do something significant, then there's a major problem.
You're talking about the bribery stories coming out of Mexico.
Exactly right.
Of course, News Corp is
hacking and bribing policemen all over Europe, Britain, I guess, and to be more precise, and hacking phone lines, all of which gives us jurisdiction here to do something. If they don't do cases against those companies, the problem is not the companies only. It's at the Justice Department, and I think the outcry should be overwhelming. And basically, these guys, they're doing idiot cases around the country. We're spending more time on steroids with baseball players than we are with issues that matter.
Right. I mean, I appreciate that the securities cases are difficult, but I mean the law of averages and the number of stories. I mean, whether it's HUD bringing them a huge dossier of third party insurance scams on these mortgage insurance scams. I mean, it just seems that there has to be some type of willful desire not to prosecute for there to be so little activity.
Well, look, the FCIC report that Phil Angelides wrote, the Fiscal Crisis Inquiry Commission, referred cases. I know of documents that have been sent over there. I'm mystified that there hasn't been more done. Meanwhile, of course, we still see the banks losing billion-dollar bets on derivatives as though the world has not changed a bit.
And getting back to Schneiderman for a minute, and I appreciate that that he's I think most people, my sense is, got the sense that he went into this with certainly the best of intentions, and but it seems clear at this point. I mean, recently he was prominently featured at a fundraiser for President Obama's campaign. I mean, can he maintain the type of leverage that he needs? I mean, ostensibly, his leverage came from the idea that if this financial fraud task force is not active and is not rigorous, I'm going to walk away and I'm going to really take away a lot of its legitimacy. Can he do that at this point?
You know, I suppose you always can. I think the best thing to do, if I were down there, I'd just take the resources, make the cases, burrow in, do the hard work, not show up at conferences anymore talking about what I'm going to do. I would just say, do it. you know, the next time he should show up, he should have a case to announce, a big case against one of the banks that was involved in the robo-signing, that was knowingly marketing securitized debt that it knew was bad, that misrepresented to shareholders, to the market, to lenders, to borrowers about the quality of its debt. That's what we'd all like to see.
So in the event that we are 6 months, 8 months out from, and we've seen none of this, are we basically just in a position where we're going to be just waiting for the next financial crash before there's any chance to get any real movement? I mean, I think it's fine. What's happening with the Volcker Rule is, it is what it is, and it's only going to go so far. But I think you certainly, more than anyone, can appreciate the implications of a perp walk as to affecting people's behavior. Are we just doomed to wait?
I think we may be, and look, the markets may be clipping the wings of these institutions just because the returns they're going to get are diminishing given the realities of the marketplace right now. If we get some form of Volcker Rule, that will help a little bit. But, boy, the markets are jittery right now, and what we're seeing in Europe is saying to the world, we haven't gotten through this crisis yet. And so, yeah, I think it's going to be an ugly future.
Elliot Spitzer from a host of Viewpoint on Current, 8 p.m., I think on Time Warner, it's 103.
103, exactly right.
I appreciate you taking the time with us today.
Sam, always great fun to chat with you.
All right, folks, we got to take a break. We'll be back in a minute and talk healthcare reform. It's a wonderful story of, you know what? Let's just go to the better half of the program today. Yeah, I said it. We're going to talk healthcare. We're going to talk fiscal cliff more. We're going to talk public spending. My brief visit with Larry Kudlow. And, of course, Dylan Radigan announced yesterday on the program, it had come out on Sunday, that the Dylan Radigan Show will be no more. So next week will be my last appearance on that show on Monday. We will discuss that. I will take your phone calls. And we saw this. Spitzer mentioned the Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission. And if you recall, the Republicans on that committee refused to have the words Wall Street or fraud, or there was a whole series of words that they refused to put in the report. It's so much so that they actually made their own report without any of those words. I'm not joking. That was some time ago. Well, now we're seeing the same thing when talking about environmental crises. We'll talk about that in the better half of the program. The number, 646-257-3920. Did I mention yesterday that, because the picture is out there now, that at Netroots Nation, I was asked to sign a body part of a woman. I guess when I say it that way, I sound like a huge nerd. But it was the first time I've ever been asked to do anything like that. Although I have to say that my 6-year-old daughter has asked me to draw on her. But it's not the same. Knock on wood. Let's hope. Well, I'm just saying, I don't want to hear stories of Mila at a political conference doing this. It's not that big of a deal. But the picture's sort of funny. Pac-Man has it. I don't know how Pac-Man is actually. All right. 646-257-3920 is the number. 646-257-3920. The IM, Majority FM, seeing the better half. Oh, wait a second. Become a member of the show and you'll be able to hear all of it. Or just become a member of the show and support the show. JustCoffee.coop, coffee, tea, chocolate, organic, coupon code MAJORITY, 10% discount. Give us an iTunes review, buy merch, all the other things, donate your account. See you there.